This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I needed only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you will find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, 17 sea dips in 17 counties in 24 hours. Can it be done? I have no doubt it can. I will be meeting the man who is taking this challenge on for a very good cause indeed. I'll also be joined by intimacy and relationships coach Grace Alice O'Shea to discuss how experience isn't always everything, and on the topic of dream chasing, living a life of joy seeking, I'll be joined by rock climber and world hand gliding champion Jeff Shapiro. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, it has been a busy week, so in between the work, I was feeling very tired this week, I have to be honest. And I really noticed the knock-on effect from a drained cup. It's quite startling. I'm a bit more conscious of it now. When I'm feeling really, really tired, I have less motivation, less self-belief, less of a lust for life, and I'm a lot more sensitive. So a questioning email or even an Instagram story might impact me in ways that it just wouldn't had I been firing on all cylinders. I'm not talking about world events or real life challenges, which of course can get us at any time and we will react and feel them. But the ability to take anything on and not to spiral is far more fortified when we are in the whole of our health. So I've really, really been conscious of that and trying to get rest where I can. I was hosting the panel talks at the Future Fertility Show in the RDS last weekend. So thank you to everyone who came over to say hello and that they listened to the show. I'm always very mindful of the audience that this event obviously attracts, couples or individuals who can be on a very challenging fertility journey. And I know the amount of information can be so overwhelming, but knowledge really is power. And the atmosphere was relaxed. There was lots of compassion. And among the amazing medical experts, there were lots of counsellors and well-being experts. So there was a real representation, as well as, of course, real life stories that gave a very well-rounded approach. And it was lovely to be involved in any small way. I was also inside Trinity College for the first time this week. I didn't study there. And I never made the trip into the Book of Kells, to my shame. But I was there on Wednesday night to host an information evening on inflammation. Say that after a few glasses of wine, with a panel of experts, including Una O'Hagan, Dr. Daniel Jones, Dr. Mary Ryan, and many, many more. So inflammation is a topic I will definitely feature on the show very soon. And I want to get to some of your emails. You've been very kind to send them in to me. aliveandkicking@newstalk.com is always open to me. I asked last week on the show about loneliness. I think we have a stereotype of what loneliness can look like. And I think the reality is very different. Many confident, outgoing, busy, well-connected people can feel lonely very often. I received many emails on the topic, but this is just one. I often feel alone, says the emailer, although I'm very sociable and happy in general. A big part of this is living alone as a result of being divorced, and most people in couples over the age of 50 and 60 are not willing to go out at nighttime in general. So for me, the days are easy to fill, but the evenings are long and lonely. Most things are on during the day, most group meetups, classes, etc. Very little on at long weekends for people who are on their own. I also find people are reluctant to talk about how they actually really are. So there's lots of conversations and real feelings that are never being spoken about. this is what I think is the biggest problem. And yeah, glossing over with grand, I mean, you don't want to be stopping every single person in the street and sharing, but having that sense of connection and being a part of something is so important to the human experience. And it just keeps coming back to me lately, you know, through the show, through guests, through emails, to things I'm getting attracted to. And it's definitely something I want to revisit on the show. Looking ahead in 2026, I'd love to have some events this year that really bring people together. And I think it's starting to happen. I even saw during the week the comedian Mark Megan is having an event coming up. And he was saying, you know, is anybody coming on their own? And he's connecting people who are coming on their own so they can meet. I know Laura Dowling, when she did her big Love Your Vulva event in the National Concert Hall, she's actively saying, come on your own, come on your own. There's lots of people there. So there's a real appetite for it. And yeah, I want in. I want to be connecting people. So keep your thoughts coming in on that one. aliveandkicking@newstalk.com is our email address, and it is always open to you. Now, for people who are single, who perhaps haven't had a long-term relationship, or who somehow feel they're late to the game, there can be a real sense of stigma and shame that somehow you're behind or you should know more by now. But what if you don't actually know what you want from relationships, from intimacy, or from sex? And what if part of that uncertainty comes from feeling inexperienced? Well, I'm joined now by sex and intimacy coach specialist Grace Alice O'Shea, and of course, the themes will be adult in nature. Grace, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Claire.
Now, this is something that can happen to any gender, but you have found in your work that it's more often women who seek support here.
Yeah, so it is mainly that women come, that come and use my services anyway. But I have worked with a lot of women who basically haven't had romantic relationships before, or maybe haven't had any sexual relationships before, and basically are feeling very self-conscious about that, and it's building up in their heads basically, to the point where it can feel a bit paralyzing almost. The fear can build up where they're actually afraid to put themselves out there because they're afraid they're going to be judged by anyone they meet once the person finds out, you know, they haven't really had a partner before.
Yeah, we do place a lot of expectations on this, don't we? I know we've sort of set up society that there are certain boxes we're expected to tick, like you go through school, you may go on to study elsewhere, you get a job, you get a partner, you get a mortgage, you have a family, with a few deviations. And it's the same with romantic relationships. We're sort of expected to build up this experience from teenage years on. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily work out that way.
No, it certainly doesn't. And everyone's timeline, you know, is different. And for one person, they could have had multiple really unhealthy relationships that were actually, you know, not very positive experiences, and they can be self-conscious about that. So it's almost like you can't win. It's kind of how you're approaching it in your mind and how it gets framed in the mind. And I think like gender norms can play into this a bit as well, where as women, you're kind of told that, you know, men, if you're heterosexual in a heteronormative way, you know, men should be chasing you. You know, men should be kind of looking to date you and looking to have relationships with you. And, you know, basically you're being pursued. And then for men, there's the pressure of, you know, winning over the girl. And I know this is really old fashioned, but I think it still echoes into today's world, where then sometimes people are, you know, looked at a little bit funny, but like, oh, how come no one has committed to you yet? You know, which is such an unfortunate way of looking at it, because it's a huge investment being in a long-term relationship, and you want to make sure it's genuinely with the right person.
And I certainly remember feeling a pressure in my teens that I now discuss with my own kids to, you know, rack up these bases, if you will, you know, and there'd be discussion in school about who had done what. And again, it felt a bit like a box ticking exercise. And something I say to my kids is, you know, wait until you meet somebody you really like, and then it all comes quite naturally. But is that a bit naive? Because it doesn't necessarily come naturally. It's a skill that has to be learned. And with that, you have to make a few mistakes along the way.
Yeah, I think there is a sprinkling of truth, though, in what you're saying. And I think when we're looking to young people, we have the benefit of hindsight, you know, on our sides, where we always want better for our children or the next generation coming up, where we look back at maybe, again, like you just mentioned there, some tick the box stuff, or maybe, you know, doing doing things with people or even dating people that you know didn't really feel right, but you just felt the pressure to do it, and you don't want then your children to have to do that. But there is a certain amount of that look is just going to happen, and some of that is okay, and some of it is we do learn through experience. Actually, it's one of the most effective ways to learn about anything in life is through making a few mistakes, right? Because you remember the mistakes and you learn from them. But yeah, at the same time, it's not something that necessarily comes naturally. And as well, appearances can be deceiving because, you know, from where I'm sitting, and I work with people, again, men, women, people in all different kind of backgrounds, histories, everything. Sometimes the people who you think have it all together and have had relationships and it all looks good from the outside, they're the ones that actually struggle most behind the scenes in their relationships or struggle with self-esteem. So, you know, it's a shame we kind of sometimes look at people who are single long-term with sometimes kind of pity, whereas other times actually they can be a lot happier than someone in a relationship. I can attest to that personally, having been through bad relationships and also just from working so many clients who've been through it as well.
Yeah, I think we should celebrate the single life so much more, mm-hmm. because while being in love and having a partner in life is fantastic when you get the right mm-hmm. one, it's better to be marching to the beat of your own drum, and you're not taking on anyone else's baggage. You're really suiting yourself all the time. You're having a love affair with yourself. Do you think there is still a huge amount of shame and stigma attached to being single long term or not having had a sexual relationship? And if so, do you think that feeling comes from within or is it society wide?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer definitively because it depends who you're talking to. But I think there's definitely, I feel, there's still a stigma around, because I see it with women who come to me, not having had maybe sexual partners or sexual relationships. Now, again, I will say there is the you can't win phenomenon where have you had too many sexual partners? Because you can get judged. You can just get judged for that as a woman as well. And then for a man, you can get judged for having too little. So it's just, it's so arbitrary, isn't it? The way we assign meaning to these numbers. But there is a bit of a stigma. And I think from the people I work with, there is definitely some judgment from, let's say, society. Definitely. There is some there. There are people who are just going to judge you. They're going to find a reason to judge you anyway. But a lot of it can be internal. Do you know, we absorb it and it becomes a narrative in our head and it becomes a negative thing. Whereas often when I'm working with people who deem themselves inexperienced, that's the word they would use, I would often say, you know, what do you think experienced looks like? Because you could have someone who's had loads of partners, who's had a very active sex life, and they might not actually be a great sexual partner. They might not be great at the sexual communication and connecting with a partner. You know, it's not automatically evidence that someone is great in that part of their life and doing everything right. And every time you're with a new person, I say every time you're with a new partner, you're now inexperienced. Because that new person, if it's the first person you've been with or the 20th person you've been with, that's a new person with new history, new boundaries, new likes and dislikes, like a completely new person in front of you. So you're now inexperienced. We can't copy and paste what we did with our ex-partners, with our new partners. We have to relearn and we have to communicate. So in a way, everyone is inexperienced when they meet a new partner.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I do hope we're moving into a more equal and inclusive society, although, you know, certain developments worldwide would make you feel differently. And if you're in a same-sex relationship or you're seeking that, can that have a double pressure on it? Because you also have perhaps the added pressure of having to come out. Are we still feeling, are there still people out there who are feeling, oh God, this is a bigger deal than perhaps the heteronormative?
Yeah, there is an added layer to it. And again, I wish I could sit here in 2026 and say, no, you know, no one's bothered about that anymore. But that's very idealistic. Unfortunately, you know, people still do absolutely suffer judgment and stigma and even online abuse. you know, for being gay, for being queer, like homophobia, it's not gone. Like, it's still alive and well, unfortunately. And although hopefully it is changing, and look, people do seem to be able to come out more and get more support and find communities, it would be, you know, unfair of me to say it still can feel like an extra layer, you know, an extra thing you need to what's the word, announce, let's say, or share with the world. I don't want to diminish that. It can still be a struggle, but like, I hope we just, it's changing, and we can keep kind of pushing forward with it, and, you know, not let the kind of homophobic voices, which can be very loud, not let them win over, because we never want to go back to the way things were, ever.
And likewise, if you're non-binary or transgender, there's still a huge amount of difficulty there. And not to be glib about, you know, some of the difficulties those groups may face, but having to explain who you are and what you want, is that something we should get more comfortable with?
No matter what your gender is, no matter your sexual identity, I think our relationship with ourselves, and I always talk about this in my work, that, you know, our most important relationship is the relationship with ourselves, and an understanding of ourselves, and, as you said, who we are, what are our values? Because I think you can connect two humans from any backgrounds if they have similar values. Like, we're so focused nowadays on what divides us, and, you know, things feel so divisive, and especially online. But when you're with people in person and you can find shared values, that's where connection often grows from. And so I think that getting to know ourselves, what we want our life to look like, you know, not everyone wants children now. That's another thing we need to talk about. Life doesn't look as linear as it maybe did for previous generations. But that can be a good thing as well, because just that you mentioned gay people, trans people, etc., obviously, again, it can be hugely difficult growing up if there's negative attitudes or people feeling isolated. But a lot of queer people actually find what's called their chosen family. So, you know, even if they don't feel accepted in their own home communities or family, they find more people as adults, and they use the term chosen family. And I think that's lovely, because it's just a way of showing life doesn't have to happen in these, you know, five neat steps. You don't have to buy the house and get married and have the baby and have the long-term relationship. You can find joy and connection in a life, in 100 different lives that look different.
And what if you don't know what you want? How do you begin to figure that out?
So I suppose when it comes to what you want romantically, first of all, like what you want from a partner or a long-term partner, what you want your life to look like, all that. Again, there is a certain amount of that has to be figured out as you go, because that can change. You know, again, for example, you might meet someone and start a relationship with them, and you might think you want children, and that could change down the line, or vice versa. So some of it has to be subject to change, and there has to be, we as partners, we have to keep communicating. We have to be very intentional with, you know, not assuming we know what our partners want. But if we're talking then about not knowing what we want sexually, again, there is some learning, a lot of learning you can do about yourself before you have to, you know, list out all these things you want. You can figure out some of that with a partner and as you meet people. But that's where people like me come in, where I help women and men who have very little sexual experience. And that doesn't matter when it comes to our conversations, because I can help them figure out, okay, but what does sex mean to you? What could it mean to you? What would you like that part of your life to look like? So again, a lot of it is down to the self-exploration, but don't expect yourself to have all the answers neatly tied up, because things can change as well.
And I'd imagine there's people, and I remember feeling it myself during single years, you know, back in my 20s, you know, my friends would be like, get out there, Claire, you know, that's exactly what you have to do. And is that what you have to do, or do you take really small steps?
It depends on the person. I am all about conquering fear through action. So I think I've said before in a different discussion with you, you know, sometimes we try and think our way into change, and the thinking and the self-reflection, all that, it is so important, but we do need to push ourselves a bit. So what I would say, if you envision your comfort zone, right, the way we expand a comfort zone is step by step by step. It is small steps. So if you're thinking of whatever it is, going to speed dating, joining an app, asking someone out, joining a book club or a hiking club, or just to meet people, whatever. If you think of that action and that step, does that feel like being nudged outside of your comfort zone, or does it feel like being kicked outside of your comfort zone? If it feels like being nudged, that's probably good. That's probably something you can absolutely do, and there'll be a bit of fear, but you can do it, and you will build confidence from that and probably build connection. But if it feels like, oh my God, that's a huge jump, okay, then maybe can we pull it back a bit and take a smaller step first?
And is your inexperience something you should be open and honest with? I mean, perhaps not on the first date or the first texts in the dating app, but when it starts to move towards that stage, should you fake it till you make it or be open and honest?
So I actually talk to a lot of people about this and help them try and figure out what to do and how to handle that. My general advice would be, I wouldn't say fake it till you make it, but I also wouldn't say you have to make a big announcement or disclosure either, right? Because if we think about the tone which we deliver things, if I go into a situation and I'm getting to know someone and I'm like, oh God, I have to tell them now, I've never been with anyone before, and how are they going to react, and should they won't want to be with me? If I'm going in with that energy, I'm probably going in very apologetic, and almost there could be shame almost radiating off me, right? And that's not going to make me feel good or confident in that situation. It's good to open up to a partner. That's what it's all about. It's all about, like, love is built from vulnerability and intimacy and connection. So we do have to, I believe we do have to be honest. I believe that's the way, even if we watch a rom-com, like, you know, being honest usually wins out in the end. And is better for us. But it's thinking about the person you're talking to, you know, do they seem kind? Do they seem respectful? Are they someone you want to share your story with? And if you do share your story and God forbid they don't react well or they are judgmental, okay, they're not the right person for you. That was a really good filter to filter out that person who would not have fitted in your life anyway. So it's hard to know exactly how honest to be. I'm a very honest person, but that's me. And I know not everyone, like, you know, the fear can creep in for sure. But it's asking yourself, what's the worst that can happen here? You know, if I'm honest, what is the worst that can happen? Someone will judge me. Okay, feels horrible. No one enjoys that, but you'll get through that. And it'll help you then, you know, actually end up with or meet a partner that is genuinely accepting and kind and just sees you for who you are.
Yeah. And I think it's really important what you said about that relationship you have with yourself and the tone you use. So if you're coming from a place of a real lack of self-esteem here, you know, and you're, it's as if you're confessing this lack of inexperience, then that's going to give off a certain impression. Whereas perhaps when you reach a stage of trust, you might have a chat and you might even find that your partner is in the exact same situation. And then look, haven't you met a kindred spirit? And as you said, if they find this information, regardless of their experience, with respect and compassion and kindness, well then, yeah, that, you know, the filter worked. I think that's really important. Well, if people want to find out more about Grace Alice O'Shea and her work, you can go to gracealice.com. Sex and intimacy specialist, Grace Alice O'Shea, thank you so much for coming on.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, two friends, Paul Byrne and Sonia Storm, are planning 17 sea dips in 17 counties in 24 hours, all to raise funds for Laura Lynn Children's Hospice. It's happening a month from now on April 26th. It's taking a love of sea swimming to the extreme, but of course for a very worthy cause. And Paul Byrne joins me in studio now. Paul, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Claire, and thanks for having me.
And you got into the sea because of back issues, and you're not a fan of the swimming pool.
No, my wife laughs at me because even on holidays years ago, you couldn't drag me into the sea. And then I started to get back issues and my wonderful physio, Anna, recommended that I would sea swim. I'd rather walk in hot coals, but I tried it and it just, I remember being one morning in Greystones and I nearly fell asleep lying on my back in the water, and that was it.
What is it that you don't like about swimming pools? I'm not mad on them either, so I'm just trying to share this collective.
Nearly drowning when I was young in one. Kind of kids messing around down in the ASB club in Sportsco. And they're kind of, you know, indoors, the chlorine. I'll swim in them, but I prefer to be on the fresh air and swim in the sea. And, you know, there's a bit more adventure about it, so.
Be fully immersed in nature. And I love what you're doing. I love why you're doing it. And I think it's really interesting. You found yourself at a low ebb, as we often do sometimes, a bit fed up in life. We have one of those days. And it was an interview you heard that really sparked all this.
Yeah, a 56-year-old man feeling sorry for myself, bad knees, bad back. And I was just working away, just having one of those days. And in the background, there was a family just talking about their experience in Nora Lynn. And I kind of snapped out of myself and just, you know, thought there's, you know, more important things in life. And I was lucky enough to raise money for Wicklow Cancer Support through a golf society. So I enjoyed the fundraising aspect of it. And it was a fantastic cause. So I just said, look, I need to just really help Laura Lynn. They're on my doorstep and they just do absolutely wonderful work. And I get to do the swimming as well, which was hugely important. So, like, swimming picks you up. But, you know, as I said, there's more important things in life than, you know, a middle-aged man feeling sorry for himself. So.
Yeah, and I only say it because I think we all feel it from time to time, you know, and to have that spark and be pulled out of it, I think is a really lovely thing. And Laura Lynn is an incredible place. I've been out many times through work, and I've interviewed Jane, who set it up. She's a mother who lost her two children in quick succession. And she decided to give back and set up what is now Ireland's Children's Hospice. And they make it a very special place for children with life-limiting conditions or indeed facing end of life. And when we talk about our well-being, something that we often forget is the power of giving back. And that makes it seem a bit transactional that you're giving back to feel good about yourself. But it's not really about that. Community is so important. And for you to think, hang on a second, what am I moaning here for when there's people going through all untold horror very close to where I'm living now? What can I do about that? I mean, that's what really fuels the human spirit, I think.
Absolutely. And look, we're in a desperate world at the moment. You know, so many things to feel bad about. And sometimes we need to take a deep breath, a step back and just give a bit of love out there. And that's really it. Like, I have a 22-year-old daughter studying to be a vet and she inspires me every day. So, you know, it's really easy, you know, just to kind of get down about yourself. But there's so much things in life. Look, we're living on an island. We have this beautiful coast, beaches over in Sligo. There's so many places to visit. Up in Mayo, down in Kerry, it's absolutely fantastic. So, you know, everybody is entitled to a blip, but there's so much you can do out there and so much you can look forward to. And we need to keep places like Laura Lynn in our thoughts, because, you know, every day they need to be raising money, and ours is just a small gesture towards a bigger campaign. So,
well, it's actually a fairly big gesture, because you're going beyond the local raffle or, you know, the table quiz, all great endeavours. You're doing, as I said in the introduction, 17 swims in 17 counties in 24 hours. Where did this idea come from?
Well, it started in my head. I was going to swim from Derry down to Wexford, and I rang my good friend Shane, who's brutally honest with me, and he said, no, I'm not helping you unless you do them all. And I just went, you're crazy. So my background is logistics. He has a motorhome company. He's in Germany at the moment, actually collecting motorhomes. So he's used to driving big distances. So we sat down and we planned it out. And then last year we did a bit of a reconnaissance over a day and a half, and we realised it's doable. So then I spoke to my good friend Sonia Storm, who's a very tall, strong Finnish woman.
And what a cool name.
Oh, she has a friend called Michelle Thunder. You wouldn't believe it, but they rolled together. So everything Sonia does, she took up rugby and she was brilliant. She rolls, she's fantastic. So like it's a dip in the bath compared to swimming in Finland. So that my inspiration was just to try it. We looked it up and to see, was it done before? It doesn't seem to have been done in 24 hours. It doesn't really matter, because it's a fantastic challenge. But logistically, it's going to be quite difficult. That's the hardest bit. You know, getting in and out of the water for a couple of minutes is no bother to us. It'll be cold, but it's just getting there, 1,100 kilometres roughly. It works out at probably about 22 and a half hours going straight, so we no room for margin for error.
So describe the 24 hours to us. You're going to start at what time, where, and do what?
So we're going to start in Balbriggan in North County Dublin at a minute past midnight. And then we're going to work our way anti-clockwise, heading up Meath, Louth, up as far as Derry, then down to Donegal. Donegal, Leitrim and Sligo are great because it's like a triangle, and it takes about 25 minutes to drive the three of them. Then we have a couple of big drives over to Killala, a big one down to Galway, and hopefully we'll finish in Greystones in the Cove in Wicklow. A few people want to join us, and if people want to join us on the way around, it'd be fantastic as well. So,
and is it just a dip in each place, or do you have to do a specific amount of time or distance?
It'll be a couple of minutes. A couple of people have asked me how far am I swimming. One friend of mine asked, am I swimming 2 miles in each, and I just went, are you joking? So, it'll be a couple of, because as I said, it takes, if you drive that route that we're doing, just drive it alone, it's about 18 hours. So we don't have much time for mistakes. Or we're lucky that Shane and Sean, who are driving us, are boat mechanics. And we also couldn't do it without the camper van, because the camper van allows us to get in and out and change and just keep moving. So that's a brilliant addition as well. So,
and obviously keeping warm is going to be an issue, because you are going to be getting into winter sea, and you don't want that hypothermia to get in on you, because it can happen, particularly sitting in a cold camper van. Not that Shane had put you through that, if this is his gig, but that's going to be important, isn't it? Minding yourself, your energy levels, your body temperature, so that you can sustain the 24 hours.
Oh, completely. Claire, you know, true sea swimming, like it's the couple of minutes after you get out that's the important bit. But like, there'll be hot water bottles, there'll be kettles on the go. I'm going to have 17 pairs of trunks for 17 swims. And we have it all set up, like we, even down to having large buckets to put our wet gear in. So we're well covered there. Again, logistically, it's hard. There's also a shower in the camper van if we need to warm up. So I'm looking forward to it. Like it's a huge challenge, but like it gets me going. So.
And talk to me about that, because I'm always keen to widen the conversation about what health and wellness is. And we've already talked about giving back. And what about this meaning and purpose that it's brought? I mean, I can see your eyes light up when you talk about driving around to do the logistics with Shane, and everyone's getting involved and coming together. And it can really be an amazing thing to be a part of any kind of project like this.
Oh, it is. Look, I was late to sea swimming. And, you know, some people will tell you if you sea swim and you're missing an arm, you'll get out, your arm will grow back. It's not that, but it definitely is. It's hard to describe to people who don't do it. It's like, and people in work and my friends are sick of me telling them I sea swim every time. But like, it's for your mental health, it is 100% brilliant. Like the feeling you have, like I was in Sandy Cove last night at night time, getting into 8 degrees of cold. And I always hesitate when I get in, but when you get out, it's like, it really is euphoric. And especially for men, middle-aged men who don't chat to each other, you know, you meet people out there, you meet people that will just come up and chat to you. I've discovered so many places from sea swimming. Myself and my wife travel around the country and we find little coves and beaches that we would never have found. So it's a big part of your life, but it just encourages you just to get up and get out and just realise that, you know, life is for living, really.
Yeah, and there's great power in doing things that you think you can't, which is getting into the sea every time and coming out thinking, I did that, and you give yourself a pat on the back. But taking on a challenge like this, pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, it gives so much.
I've always been that type of, if I sweep the floor, I have to be the best sweeper of the floor. So, I couldn't do it without Shane and Sean driving and Sonia on board as well. So, and most people now say we're mad, we won't do it, and that encourages me even more. And then you've got, you know, Laura Lynn in the background, and you know, seeing that what people go through day to day up there. Like as I said, our challenge is little compared to that. I know it's going to be hard, but it's fun.
We will put up details on my social media. I'll share your page. And do you have a website?
We have an Instagram account, so it is 17county_dash and swim. So if you put in 17 County into Instagram, it'll pop up. So you can go onto the iDonate page, or you can click in the link in the bio. If you go on the iDonate page, just put in Sonia Storm and that'll bring it up. So we're only doing it 2 weeks and we've nearly 2,500, which is fantastic. Our target's 7,500, but we've only started. Irish people are so generous, but you just need to keep reminding them. And I'm good at that. So I'm a member of Wicklow Golf Club. So they're going to be good to me down there and support me, and people in work and my family have been fantastic. So.
And there is a list up there of all the stops you're making in order. So you are up for sea swimming clubs or anybody to come and support there on the night.
Yes, there's already a group called the Swimming Balbriggan Socks. A lady has got in contact with me. So we've changed slightly where we're going to begin in Balbriggan, because we realised that our site that we wanted to start at King Strand, when the tide is out, it's far out. So again, logistically, having to get out and back. So we're starting in a place called Delvin Bridge Strand, which is right on the border of Meath, handy enough. So we can actually swim in Dublin and swim in Meath without even changing our swim gear, which is fantastic. But yeah, absolutely. We would love, it would be fantastic. And as I said, when we finish in Greystones, hopefully we'll have a bit of a hoolie at the end. So
yeah, sounds great. I love it. I think it's such a brilliant, brilliant thing to do. Let's get behind Paul and Sonia on this. If you want to find out more, you can go to @17counties_swim_. Paul Byrne, I know you're going to do it. So enjoy it. Be in it, because what an amazing thing to do. And let's raise lots of money for Laura Lynn. Thank you so much for coming on.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, talking of living the life of your dreams can sometimes feel misguided and rather privileged, with so many just doing their best to simply get by. But what happens when someone just leans in to what makes them feel truly happy, a little at a time, until it becomes the life they lead? Jeff Shapiro is based in Oregon. He's an elite level rock climber, an ultramarathon trail runner, a world-class hand glider pilot, a wingsuit base jumper, and a professional paraglider pilot. He's clearly a busy guy, and I'm so glad he's made the time for us. Jeff, you are very welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. Yeah, it's great to meet you.
It's quite the CV. Like I said in my introduction, did you ever think you would have that list of accolades or endeavors to your name?
No. To be honest, all of those things have come fairly organically. I was always a curious kid, and I think attracted to adventure of some sort, maybe just for the exotic nature of being different than normal life, or feeling like I wanted something that was difficult to earn, or that you had to earn the right to experience. And I was always sort of taken by adventure, and I learned how to climb when I was fairly young. I think I really, really got into rock climbing somewhere between 12 and 14 years old. And by the time I was a late teenager, through climbing, I had met a friend who introduced me to flying hang gliders. And you know, the living in the era where you can run off the side of a mountain with a set of wings and fly away and sort of pretend to be a bird for a while just felt like magic to a teenager, and certainly was a way to live what I considered to be a dream at that time, and became a vehicle to travel the world and to be introduced to new culture and meet a lot of amazing people. And one thing sort of led to another, and through hang gliding I was introduced to wingsuit base jumping, and I've always continued to climb and have that be sort of a dominant feature in my life. But the human flight thing grabbed a hold of me, and I think over a number of years and a lot of hours in a hang glider, I wanted to experience a similar game but in a different vehicle, and that sort of brought me to paragliding. And now I fly airplanes, and I've had a fascination with birds. So yeah, none of those things were ever a goal in terms of making a living. They were always just these things that were incredibly fascinating and sort of organically turned into a way to keep the lights on and help take care of my family.
And I think there's so much, so many of us can learn from you. We might never engage in extreme sports, but that idea of perhaps feeling the fear and doing it anyway. I mean, you must have to really trust yourself to throw yourself off the side of a cliff that first time.
Yes, but I think it's also kind of a lesson towards this idea that if you have a dream or you have a goal in mind, to realize that it's just a series of baby steps, that if you just do the work, if you understand the process and all of the steps along the way that it would take to earn the right to do the thing, then it breaks it down into a task, you know, that is tangible. It, in other words, if I think of the summit, I never make it there. But if I think about putting one foot in front of the other, then not only do I usually have a better chance of, you know, sort of traditional success, but I also stay present and get to enjoy what is sort of most offered in that experience, which is every step of the way, right? Like the goal is never the goal. The goal is to grow as a person and to have those experiences affect you in a way that's applicable to the rest of, at least it has been to the rest of my life. So, you know, I think risk or doing things that are uncomfortable, whether you're successful or not, doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter if it's life or death, but what matters most is that I grow as a person and that, you know, that allows for the humility to look at the world from perspectives other than my own. And I think that's been the most valuable outcome from most of the exploration that I've been fortunate to do.
And can you describe that feeling of human flight? What does that feel like? I'm not sure it's something I'll ever experience for myself, and I do wonder about spending that time in the sky.
Yeah. To be honest, it's really hard to put into words. It's kind of like describing a sunset, you know. It's really hard to have it have the same impact or visceral impact that it gives you when you experience it. But it is a sense, for me at least, it's a sense of freedom, and I feel now like flying is, I mean, it's always kind of felt a little bit more natural than say, you know, other things that I've tried. So maybe there's a bit of sort of personal, you know, just a connection to that environment for me. But yeah, I would say overwhelmingly it's a sense of freedom. And I think also maybe letting go of expectation, because there's quite a bit of sort of, it's not uncertainty, but you know, certainly you're giving yourself into the moment, you know, in terms of like visceral experience. I mean, geez, you're, you know, I think as humans we live in an incredibly lucky time to be able to strap on a set of wings and fly around like a bird, especially the types of flying without an engine. And I do enjoy flying an airplane too, but there's a very, very unique sense of freedom when you jump off a cliff and open your arms and fly away. I think hang gliding is probably the most bird-like flight that I've experienced, but wingsuit-based jumping off of a cliff and flying with your arms with yourself as the vehicle, that's sort of more the way I guess I've always dreamed of flying.
And did you have to learn courage and bravery as you went along, or did you always have a sense of that?
Well, I mean, I think courage and bravery is something that everybody has the ability to tap into in terms of these activities that involve risk and consequence. I think it's important, it has been important for me to understand the difference between real danger and fear and doubt. At first, when you know you're not super experienced, or when I wasn't super experienced at those, you know, that these activities, that line between those two descriptions was pretty blurry. But as you gain experience, it becomes a little bit more defined. And if I'm feeling those feelings that you feel regardless whether they're justified or not, I usually ask myself which one of those things it is. And if it's fear and doubt, what I'm scared of is something that hasn't happened yet. In other words, you know, a crash or a fall, or, and being scared of something that hasn't happened is irrational. So I accept the emotion just like any other emotion. And, you know, in the words of a friend, I stick it in a file, I kick it in the corner, and I give it the weight that it's worth, which is generally zero. If it's real danger, then it's important to pay attention to what it is that you should, you know, what that's driving that fear, and to try and use your training and your your skill set to make sure that the worst things that can happen don't happen. And that just takes, again, a lot of training. So I would say if there was real danger and I was feeling fear, then maybe it would be important to step back a little bit and do more training so that I didn't feel like I was, in that level of danger relative to my skill set and my level of experience.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting, because really what I'm hearing from you, even though there's a sense of freedom to it, often it's calculated risk. You're still smart in what you do. But then I was reading that you were one of the first people to explore mountain flying with the hang glider in an area in central Nepal. So does that mean it's uncharted territory? So you're trying to figure out where you're going to land while you're still airborne?
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes doing first ascents in the mountains in the climbing environment, or flying into new places, going cross country in a paraglider or a hang glider in an area that you haven't been before or that no one has been before. I mean, there is a certain, I mean, for me, there's definitely a certain romance in having a completely uncertain outcome. Life is pretty sterile these days, so I like having the ability to do things where the answers aren't in front of me. I've never done anything that was super risky and just like hoping for the best. That's never been a strategy I don't think that would serve me too well. So in other words, I've never jumped off a cliff head first hoping for the best. It's always calculated. And I think that making decisions based on logic and linear knowledge and all of these things while paying attention to intuitive thought is also a good balance towards keeping yourself safe. But that all put aside, it is nice to have an adventure with an uncertain outcome. And you might think that those things sound contradictory, but they're not. You know, having the skills to be prepared for something and not having the answers as to where I might end up, you know, those two things can exist together. And to me, that's the kind of the best part of, you know, the best moments in life are the combination of those two things.
I was really drawn to one of the quotes that you gave at a recent interview. If you're doing anything other than seeking happiness from the time you're born to the time you die, you're wasting your life. And what does happiness represent to you? Because I suppose to some people it can be something fleeting, but, you know, everything that you've said up until now, you know, that sense of adventure, that sense of challenging yourself, that sense of leaning in to what excites you and yet being prepared. Is that what you're alluding to there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think happiness is a place or a thing or a person. You know, it's a choice that we make. And for me, that takes remembering what I have and not being too worried about what I don't have. And, you know, I don't think that when I say, you know, when you said happiness is something that's fleeting, I think it is fleeting. I think it's always something that we're seeking. I want to say that another part of that quote that you might have read was that it's not my job to be happy, but it is to seek it. And what that means is, you know, I'm not claiming that I'm happy all the time. I feel stress and fear and, you know, all of the emotions like everybody else. That's part of being human. But what I mean is that I think a lot of people are motivated to make money or to have, you know, the illusion of security or all of these other things. And what I feel like applies to my life through my own experience is that life is short. None of us are going to make it out of this alive. We all are born and we all will die. And in the in-between, everything is a get to. I get to do these things. I get to experience. And sometimes those experiences are negative and they don't feel good and there's suffering involved. And that's okay. But it all leads to growth. And, you know, in that process, I want to learn how to appreciate what I have. And to constantly try and make that decision to say, hey, I'm gonna react to the world around me in a positive way, so that not only can I, you know, hopefully have a positive influence on the people that I care about most, but also so that I can utilize my time alive, you know, my time on this planet that I'm privileged to have, to experience the world in a positive way, as positive as I can. And I mean, to me, it's a pretty easy choice. I wouldn't want to sort of live a negative life. That seems like sort of slapping that privilege in the face or taking my life for granted. So that's at least a driving factor for day-to-day life for me, and also for the bigger picture from beginning to end.
And one of your big values now in life is giving back, either through philanthropy or passing on what you've learned to others. So how have you found this chapter in your life?
You know, it's wonderful. I mean, it's funny. I actually read, it was kind of a transcript from a interview, and the person being interviewed, I want to say they were a professor from Harvard, but they were saying that, you know, in these stages, I mean, say past the age of 50, that people who had, you know, experienced a lot in their lives, if they're on the right path, that maybe that was the stage at which they could sort of teach or give back. And, you know, there has never been any guide to that, this stage sort of happening for me, but it correlated, and it made me kind of smile, because I'm finding that I get a lot of satisfaction and fulfillment passing on some of the experiences that I have, that I've had, to say new pilots or people that are involved in some of the things that have been, you know, really passionate aspects of my life. It's been really fulfilling. And then, you know, the other part is that sometimes along the way there's been some pretty hard lessons, and I feel like if someone asks, it's also a privilege to sort of support them by giving them some of my experiences. Not that you know, it's anything more than exactly what that is, my experience, but if they can learn something from it and it'll apply to their life in a way that's helpful, then you know, it's again a privilege for me to be able to share that. So, yeah, it's an interesting time in life, and I'm enjoying it for sure.
If people want to follow Jeff and see some of the things he spoke about, you can get him on Instagram at Jeffrey Shapiro. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Claire. Yeah, I appreciate it. It's great to meet you, and it's a privilege to have a conversation with you.
So that's it for Live and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aoife Breen, to Maurice O'Sullivan, and to Hugo De Silva Scott, who was on sound. Rory Galvin was on podcasts. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.